What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 398 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And you can follow along on Facebook and Twitter slash X for the latest updates. Whatever you're calling it these days. I don't know if you're calling it Twitter X. I don't really care, but whatever it is. You can follow along there. Good to be back with you folks this week. Got a lot to get to today, on this Tuesday midday here. Got a good week for you folks. Good episode today. Plenty of stuff to get to. We got a good guest Friday for you guys later this week. Got a returning guest coming back to talk Celtics as the playoffs are here. Celtics finished up their regular season on Sunday afternoon with their 61st win of the season over the Hornets. So the Celtics will be entering the playoffs. So obviously, plenty of Celtics to get to today. And then obviously later this week, also be doing like NBA playoffs as well today and later this week. Also got some Red Sox to get to as well. Things are not going super well for the Red Sox, but we'll talk about all the issues that they're looking at. Got some Bruins as the season is mercifully over. Final game of the regular season is tonight. Bruins against the Devils. So we'll get into some Bruins topics as well. Little Patriots as the draft is roughly 2 weeks away. Got some Revolution stuff. And then we got a great top five for you guys later in the program. Really looking forward to that. So I think before we get going, I would like to say thanks to Chris Burns for coming back on Guest Friday last week. Great conversation about the Masters. Quite a tournament that took place over the weekend with Rory McIlroy finally winning the green jacket for his career slam. So obviously Chris and I talked at length about Rory last week, about him kind of coming up short in a bunch of these Masters tournaments, but finally got the job done. It was quite the final round on Sunday, so that was pretty exciting that he got the job done. Great talking to Chris last week. But yeah, got a great guest Friday for you guys later this week talking Celtics. So I think we'll get to the Celtics, but I think we're going to start with the Red Sox. It's kind of been the front of mind for me in the last 24 hours or so with this team kind of really starting to unfortunately kind of settle into what they're being known for at this point. In the season, and the struggles on offense are pretty ridiculous lately. We think about where we were last week. The Red Sox had come off scoring, 18 runs in that second half of the doubleheader against the Cardinals. Then since that point, you have to do some quick math here, but I don't think that they've scored 18 runs in the last, six, seven games, whatever it's been. But yeah, it's just the struggles for offense are continuing. You saw the offense kind of come back a little bit, in that Cardinals series at the tail end of that Baltimore series and then into the Cardinals series. But you look at the runs scored in the last 8 games since that Sunday night game, 2 runs. 1 run, 1 run, four runs, 1 run, 2 runs, 3 run, 3 runs, 1 run. Jeez, tongue twister there, but you get the idea. So if you look at quick math here on the podcast, that's 3, 4, 8, 9, 11, 14, 15. The Red Sox have scored 15 runs in their last 8 games after scoring 18 runs in that Sunday night game against the Cardinals. So obviously, the bats have gone cold again. That was kind of what had happened the first series of the season against the Rangers, that the Red Sox just could not hit for guys and could not hit with guys in scoring position and just were struggling all over the place. And it's kind of more of the same. I don't think that there's really anybody that you can look at and say, okay, this player has been very solid over the last week. You know, it's Willy Abreu, it's Trevor Story, and that probably is it. No one else is really doing much of anything offensively. And honestly, the Red Sox really, I think, got lucky in that, you know, Toronto game that they won in extra innings in a game that was very similar to the Wednesday night game that they lost in extras. I think the Red Sox were able to do enough to win that game in the 10th inning Thursday. You know, that's one win. And then the other win was, you know, Crochet pitching into the 8th inning with a no-hitter. You know, I think it was into the 7th inning in a perfect game. You know, and so those are your only two wins this week. Every other game, you know, a low offensive event game in which you're really not doing much of anything. You're losing to some teams that aren't very good. You know, losing 3 out of 4 to Toronto, that's a team that you should be better than. And Chicago, I mean, they were one of the worst teams in the history of the league last year. Not saying that, okay, they're as bad as they were last year, because it's hard to know at this point, but it's like, you should be able to score more than 6 runs in 3 games against that team. So it just is very frustrating that, you know, that the issues with the bats are coming back. They're not hitting with guys in scoring position. They're really just not doing much of anything, you know, very few, you know, home runs. And it's like, it seemed to all come crashing down and get, you know, as worse as it could get last night with that loss in Tampa, you know, the 16-1 game in which, you know, Tanner Houck gets, you know, absolutely dominated. And, you know, outside of that one good start that he had against Toronto last week, he's had a hard time, you know. And it's one of those things that, you know, typically when guys struggle in spring training, it's kind of just chalked up to, oh, you know, they're just kind of getting used to the swing of things. And the issues have kind of remained for Tanner, unfortunately. And, you know, this is a team that's kind of shorthanded in terms of starting depth. And I think with the guys that are out with injuries, and, you know, hopefully they're back soon, I think Giolito and Brian Bello are making at least one more rehab start. You know, you're looking at a pitching rotation that's kind of getting thin. And I think you need guys like Houck to step up. You know, he was an all-star last year, and you expect him to kind of be one of those frontline guys for this rotation. Now, sure, it's early in the season. He's only made 3 or 4 starts, but it's like, it's kind of not great that he didn't start well in spring and is kind of having some of the same issues. So, you know, you hope that he can get those things fixed, whether it's mechanics or whatever. But, you know, this is a team that's like, they're already struggling for offense. And if you start struggling with your starting pitchers, which, like, outside of Crochet, they've kind of started to struggle. You know, Crochet, I think, is 3-1 on the season with an ERA that's like under 1.5. You know, if I look at this really quickly, you know, he is 2-1 with a 1.38 ERA. And then you look in the Globe this morning that, you know, the other starters are like 1-7 with a 5 or 6 ERA. And it's like, obviously that's not going to get it done. So it's like, you know, you need to be able to be good in both those areas. And I don't think the Red Sox have really found that consistency. You know, I think you look at the offensive series that they had against the Cardinals, the starting pitching kind of wasn't great in that series, you know. And now it's like the starting pitching maybe is a little bit better, but the offense can't score runs. And it's just obviously that's not a combination that's going to work. You know, I think the only good thing is we're a couple weeks into April, we're only 18 games in, the team's 8-10, but it's like this is the first time in years that this team has expectations. And it's kind of just like a start like this isn't really acceptable. You know, I think that it's kind of just like, oh, you know, it's April, first month of the season, but it's like this team came in with the expectation that they're going to compete and they're going to compete for the AL East title. And it's just, you've not really seen the consistency really at all this season. You know, you've seen certain guys play well. You know, Crochet has been as advertised, maybe even more than advertised. Like, for me personally, I knew that he was good. I didn't think he was this good. You know, he's making it look easy out there, and you know, he's playing well. Abreu's been solid, but I think that there are, you know, certain guys that kind of got off to slow starts, guys that aren't, you know, performing offensively like you would expect. And it just is, doesn't seem like there's a lot of, you know, energy and kind of like enthusiasm with this team. And I know that it's hard when you're losing games and you're losing games against teams that you should beat and you're on the road and such. But, you know, this is a team that really kind of needs to get it together. Because again, you're playing with expectations for the first time, you know, in a long time. This is not like, oh, you know, you look up and they're 11 and 20, and it's like, oh, you know, they were kind of like last year's team. Oh, they don't really have a lot of talent. It's like, that's not the case this year. You have a lot more talent. You have a team that should be a lot better than what they are. And it's a little bit concerning for me too that the defense hasn't gotten really better. The defense still kind of has had its issues. There are a lot of errors still. And so that's kind of concerning because I think you thought that the defense would be a little bit better. You know, Casas is having issues at first base again. You know, Bregman is usually pretty sure-handed, and he's kind of had some issues. So, you know, this is a team that, you know, all the different areas need to be working for them to be successful, and doesn't really seem like there's any consistency in any area right now. You know, the starting pitching, Crochet really is the only guy that's showing you anything. And with the lineup, you know, it's Willy Abreu, Trevor Story that I think are doing very well and I think are, you know, carrying the offense. Story has 21 hits already this season. You know, Abreu tied for the team lead in RBIs, but you know, Duran is hitting 230. He's not gotten off to a good start. You know, Devers has cooled off a little bit lately at 224. You know, Casas is 175. He hasn't really hit much at all this season. So it's like you're kind of counting on some of those guys to pick it back up. You know, Bregman has driven in 12 runs, tied for the team lead. But it's like leading off, like Duran, you need more from him. You know, you need more from Raffy Devers. And it's like, now he's had that horrible start out of his way, but it's like he needs to produce. Like, you need to have him hit home runs. You know, Campbell's been very good. I've enjoyed watching him. You know, I think he's been another bright spot in terms of the offense, but his defense is kind of, he's had some issues too. So it's like, I think it's a group that really kind of needs to get it together sooner rather than later. Because I think you can't get in a position where you start to get, you know, buried in the standings. And I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, things are so dire. You know, they're 8-10, they stink. But it's like, this is a team that probably should be better. They should be doing better against opponents like Toronto and the Chicago White Sox. You know, I know it's difficult when they've missed a couple guys in the rotation. You know, I think they come back soon, but it's like you need more consistency with your starters other than Crochet. They need more consistency from their lineup, you know, outside of guys like Story and Abreu. And it just needs to be better. And it's kind of hard because I don't know specifically like what they can do differently, but it's like, you know, I think you hope that with the rotation in particular, getting the guys back healthy works. You know, I was very impressed with some of the Richard Fitz starts. You know, unfortunately had to leave his last start with an injury. I don't think they believe it to be very serious, but he was, you know, kind of good to watch him pitch well. But I think it's like they need more from guys like Buehler. Obviously, they need more from Tanner Houck. You know, it's been a rocky start for him, four starts already, and as a 9 ERA, which, you know, obviously you can't have that. And especially a guy who's basically your number two starter, There needs to be more consistency. Now, I think somebody like Sean Newcomb, isn't really a guy that you expect to kind of be in the rotation the entire season. I think he's kind of a fill-in, until Giolito and Bayo come back. But, it's just, you need more consistency. I think that's really what it is. And, this team really needs to get back on track, and get back to that team that can, score runs with the best of with the best of the American League, and get the decent enough starting pitching so that you don't feel like, one thing is working well and the other thing isn't. And it's like the starting pitching and the batting, just needs to come together. So Red Sox coming off that ugly loss last night, in Tampa Bay, they will finish up the series against the Rays tonight and Wednesday. Walker Buehler will go tonight. Sean Newcomb will go on Wednesday, and then the Red Sox will host the White Sox for a four-game set over the weekend, and then we'll have that Patriots Day game on the 21st, Marathon Day. So that's what it's looking like for the Red Sox for the next six games. Hopefully the lineup can get back to what they were doing against the Cardinals, but we will see. I think it's, again, still early in the season, but this is a team that still definitely has a lot of things to work on. So I think that's going to do it for the Red Sox. Going to move on and talk some Celtics as they came to the end of the regular season on Sunday. I think I was one of those people that I was kind of ready for the regular season to be over, because it's like we've been talking about getting ready for the playoffs and staying healthy and rest and all those things for weeks. And now it's like, okay, playoffs are here, and the Celtics, getting some time off, obviously, before the start of the first round series. So I think all things are looking good for the Celtics team. I think that you've seen some really good progress this season, and I know that it's hard to talk about progress when you're coming off winning the championship, and it's like, okay, how do you really get much better? But, I think that this is a team that, showed some signs of resilience, which I think is great. I think that this team kind of going through some of the slow or some of the poor play in the middle of the season in December and January, they were able to bounce back from that, and have a good second half, have a good post, all-star break, where it seemed like they played more like the team that you expect to see. And I think honestly, the way that they ended the season, 61 wins, just three shy of last season's, win total, it shows you that this is a team that I think is just as dangerous. I think honestly, this team might even be better than last year's team. I think that you're seeing guys in kind of the non-star roles kind of be more comfortable in their roles. And, Pritchard, for example, the great year that he had scoring, the great year that he had, affecting the game off the bench, I think being what I think is the clear favorite for sixth man of the year, seeing somebody like Luke Cornett become more comfortable in his role. And, Derek White, we know what he can do with his clutch shooting and how good that he's been in the fourth quarter in games this season, how good Porzingis has been at certain times. It was unbelievable in that Knicks game last week in which he scored 34 points. And obviously you have Jason Tatum, gets better every season. Jaylen Brown, who's just, again, I think like Jason, also gets better every season. Jrue Holiday has dealt with some injuries, but I think that he's been kind of a solid presence for this team throughout the year. So it's like the guys have gotten more comfortable in their roles. And I just think that Joe Mazzulla has also grown in his role as a coach. And I just think this is a team that has shown that they're ready, they're hungry, and they're willing to, try to get better every game. And I think that that's great to see. It's great to see that they were able to pull through kind of the tougher parts of the season and get it together and be like, okay, this team is just as good. And so I think, really it's just the health of this team that I think really is the most important thing. Now, obviously, there are some concerns about Jaylen Brown's knee. I'm definitely one of those people that's a little bit wary about how healthy is he really going to be, playoffs or playoffs, of course. But I think that's the one thing that I think could possibly, and I don't want to say become an issue, but it's like if the Celtics are playing in a tough physical series, he has to miss a couple games, you're missing that slashing ability, that scoring ability. And I just, don't know how effective he's going to be if that knee continues to be a problem. Now, if the Celtics are able to manage it okay, and he's able to battle through it, that's great. But if there becomes a setback at some point, are the Celtics really going to be in a good enough position to be able to kind of pick up the slack? Now, I'm not saying that Jaylen's going to be missing games throughout the playoffs. Maybe he misses a game or two, but it's like they're going to need to be able to like adapt to that, and whether that means more looks for certain guys, more kind of offensive opportunities for Derek White and Jrue Holiday or Porzingis, or does that mean that players off the bench get more looks? Does Sam Hauser play a lot of minutes? Do you see Baylor Shireman at some point? Torrey Craig, do you see any of those guys at any point? Because I think, they want to be able to have enough bodies at that wing position, because you're going to be playing a lot of those kinds of guys in the postseason that you're going to need to be able to match up against. So, I think Jaylen's knee is something to monitor for sure. I do think, though, that 100%, what does that really look like? Is Jaylen really going to be 100%? Can the Celtics, withstand this, postseason run that I think could get treacherous? Can they handle it with him maybe not being at 100%? But you know what he can do. What he brings to the team, and his ability to score and his ability to, kind of be that emotional leader. I don't have concerns about his ability, but it's like, how much does that knee limit what he can do? So I think that's really the only concern I really have for this team is, health. Can they get Porzingis to be fully healthy for the playoff run? Because I think if they can do that, that definitely makes a huge difference, because obviously he's a tremendous matchup nightmare. It gives the Celtics the ability to feed the ball to a guy in the post that can post up, can step out and shoot the three. So I think, making sure that he's 100% is good, and I think they've done a pretty good job at, resting guys and keeping guys in rhythm. But I think, really, I don't see many issues with this team. Like, I think, sure, could they have some issues against Atlanta or Orlando in the first round? They present some challenges, but I don't really think the Celtics are going to face too many tough challenges in the first two rounds, assuming that they advance. If it's possibly the Knicks in the second round, that's not a team that I'm particularly worried about. Cleveland obviously is going to be the team to beat, if they're able to make it to the conference finals. They present a lot of challenges for the Celtics, but I think the biggest thing for this team is just to have the rest, get healthy. Hopefully that week off, that week plus off for Jaylen Brown helps, and they can count on him to be 100%. Now, I expect that he's going to play majority or all of these playoff games. I really don't think that this is a serious enough injury that's going to keep him out for, three, four games or something like that at a different point. I fully expect that he plays and plays through this, but it's kind of like, how effective is he going to be, and how effective is he going to be when they get into matchups where they really need him? Because I think, in theory, I think they're good enough to win a first round second round series without him, but it's like he's gonna need to be like pretty close to fully healthy if they're gonna want to beat Cleveland, if they're gonna want to beat, Oklahoma City in the finals, assuming that, that matchup happens. But I think really I'm pretty confident in this team's ability. I think you've kind of seen different guys, excel in their roles, in their larger roles. Their roles are a little bit different from last year, but I think that, yeah, I don't, I wish that I could, sit here and talk more about like other areas that maybe are concerning, but it's like this is a team that's played excellent basketball for weeks now. Really, if you look back at their schedule, yes, of course, losing to Orlando last week was not a good game, but Celtics are resting their top six, so it's like you can't really read too much into that game. And obviously, if the Celtics are going to play the Magic, it's kind of hard to read into that matchup. But I think, if I think about Orlando and Atlanta, the two teams playing in the play-in tonight, that the winner will play the Celtics, I think that the Magic might be a better team for the Celtics to play. I have my concerns about their, physicality, but Orlando's not a team that can score particularly well, and they're going to try to kind of make games into rock fights, and I think the Celtics are going to be able to withstand that. The only issue that I could see is the Magic, causing the turnovers, and the Celtics maybe get a little too complacent. That can sometimes happen, but I do think that they're probably the team that the Celtics could most likely have no trouble with. The Hawks have given the Celtics problems in the past. Bogdanovich and Hunter are no longer with the team, so that helps. But Trae Young can still put on great playoff performances, and they're still a team that can dominate the offensive glass, and sometimes the Celtics can have issues with that. So, and they're also good at causing turnovers. So I kind of feel like Orlando is going to be the better matchup for the Celtics. Obviously, I really like Banchero and Franz Wagner as players, that I think they're two physical guys that can get to the rim, but there's not a whole lot of offense on that team otherwise. So I feel like that team is going to be kind of the easier matchup. But it's like you look at the other games this team has lost in the last couple of weeks, the game to the Heat, in which they didn't shoot well from three, and then the loss to Oklahoma City, easily the best team in basketball this year. Those are their three losses in the last, like month plus. So I think this team is, definitely ready for the postseason. You look back to that Cleveland loss in late February that had them 42 and 18. That team went 19 and 3 after that loss, so really kind of got their stuff together and finished the season on a really high note, which I think was awesome to see, and awesome to see them be able to kind of regain that dominance that they had earlier in the season. So I think this is a team that I expect to go deep in the playoffs. Obviously, we'll talk more about this on Guest Friday, but I think that this is a team that like largely doesn't have a whole lot of issues. I think that there are always the questions about the three-point shooting and what happens when the shots don't fall. Do the Celtics get a little bit three happy? And yeah, they do, but I think if Porzingis is going to be healthy, gives them a great option, in the post. So it's like they don't have to be a team that's launching 53s, which they probably will for most games. But I think it's having the balance of those two things. It's going to be huge, obviously, in the postseason. But the Celtics are very well coached. They're a team that is not really going to go outside of what they do well. They're going to stick to what they do well. And I think that I don't expect there to be major issues in the first two rounds. I think that honestly, there's no reason to think this team shouldn't be, in the conference finals. I think would be a grave disappointment if they don't get that far, because honestly, I really don't think that there's another team in the East that, really even comes close. And I think that's been generally the story in the Eastern Conference this entire season, that it's, the Celtics and the Cavaliers and everybody else. So we will definitely see what happens. The play-in game, seventh seeded Magic tonight, eighth seeded Hawks. Winner plays the Celtics. Game one is at the Garden Sunday. Time is to be determined, but yeah, we will have Celtics be able to kind of recap that game one next week when we're talking on the podcast. But obviously, stay tuned later this week for Guest Friday. Got more Celtics, talk about their postseason run, and also take a look at the other first round series in the NBA playoffs. So I think that will do it for the Celtics. We're going to move on and talk Bruins. Team will be finishing the regular season tonight against the Devils. 7 o'clock start at TD Garden. Bruins will be awarding the seventh player award, which is a Nesson award that goes to typically a player that has most exceeded expectations. So that's always kind of an interesting award to see. I think that there could be a couple of guys that could get it. I think that Morgan Geekie might be the obvious choice. Mark Kastelic, I think, would be a solid choice as well. I think this season obviously has gotten away from the Bruins, so it's hard to have too much kind of excitement about that sort of thing. But I think it's probably going to be Morgan Geekie. I kind of don't remember who won last year. I would hope it's not Geekie, and hopefully he doesn't win 2 years in a row. I think maybe it was Trent Frederick last year. But anyway, I think Geekie is definitely the correct choice. I mean, a guy that was, over 30, has 31 goals on the season. So I think he would kind of be the obvious choice. But, I think as we come to the end of the regular season, obviously it's been a season that I don't think anybody really expected at the start. I think that, I don't know, a lot of us, including myself, probably thought that Jim Montgomery would still be coaching the team, and probably thought that, this was going to be their last regular season tune-up before the postseason. But obviously, there were things that happened, and the Bruins are now, fighting for potentially a top five pick in the draft. So, it's, as we've talked about all season, it just seems like the Bruins just were unable to really identify or really have an identity, and had problems with special teams. Defense wasn't nearly as good. I think the goaltending left a bit to be desired, and they didn't score enough. And I think unfortunately, things got to a point where the Bruins felt like, okay, we have to start thinking about the future. And that's what happened around the trade deadline, and the Bruins kind of made the tough decision to be like, okay, we're going to start thinking about the future and, trading off guys that were mainstays on the team for a long, long time, and I think the season didn't shake out the way that really anybody thought, and that's probably a position that, the front office didn't want to be in that position at the trade deadline. They always want to be in position to add to the team and add to the roster and prepare for a playoff run. But I just think there were too many kind of long-standing issues that kind of came up, that the Bruins, been unable to identify a number one center, really unable to identify enough secondary scoring, whether that was in free agency or, in the prospect pipeline. But it just felt like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, and now they're in a position where it's going to be one of the most, if not the most, critical offseason that this team has seen in probably, I don't know, close to 20 years. So, it's been a frustrating season. I think that, sure, maybe there are some positives that you can look at recently. Good to see Fabian Lysell get his first career goal on Sunday. That's a great milestone for him, obviously. I think that he's put in a lot of hard work in the minors, so great to see him be rewarded with that. And I think good for him to get that, first goal out of the way so that he's able to get that under his belt and hopefully comes into next season with hopefully a shot to make the roster, more of a shot than he's had before, we hope. But I think it's, other than that, thinking about this team recently, Geeky has continued to have his really solid career season and should be back. I've talked about at length that you really should be doing everything you can to re-sign him. Is he going to score 30 goals every season? Probably not, but he plays well with your superstar forward. And it's just like, that should be reason enough to re-sign him. So it'll be curious to see, what that contract looks like for him. But otherwise, I don't, you look at that forward group and I really think anybody, like no one's job should be safe, outside of Pastrnak and Geeky. Obviously Elias Lindholm will be back. The Bruins won't be moving him. I have been impressed with how he's played lately. Yes, I know you could say, oh, well, the last couple of weeks hasn't really mattered. They're not playing any meaningful games. But you look at the trio of him, Pastrnak, and Geeky, you kind of were hoping that you would see the chemistry earlier this season with Pastrnak and Lindholm. So I think good to see that kind of chemistry getting figured out in Geeky too. So I think it's a possibility you could see that line be together at some point to start the season. But I think otherwise, everybody else in your on your roster of like a forward, I don't think anybody's job should be safe. Pavel Zacha has been around, but could see him getting moved. I think that the guys that they brought in at the trade deadline, Casey Mittelstadt probably comes back, but I don't know about Kuznetsov. I don't know about Lauko. I think that, it's really kind of an unknown. And then you think about a guy like Lysell, you think about, Patra, who's probably going to slot into this lineup next season. So it's like you have a lot of kind of moving parts and things to consider for next season. It's been good to see some guys make, debuts and play a little bit. Riley Duran, saw him play a couple games, which was good to see. And then the Bruins with the regular season finale, we'll get to see John Farinacci in action. He's an undrafted free agent out of Harvard. He's had a pretty good season in Providence, so he'll be up for tonight's game. Frédéric Brunet, Bruins, I think sixth round pick in 2022 defenseman, will make his debut tonight. So I think that's kind of the, I don't want to say good part of kind of being out of it at this point, but it's like it gives you an opportunity to give guys like that an opportunity to get in a game and get some, opportunities. I think personally, if this team was in the playoff chase right now, I don't think you'd be able to see Lysell play for the games that he's played. Like, I don't even know if you'd see him at all. And I think it's just good to see the team finally kind of giving him the ice time that, I think he deserves. So I think, for this team, it's kind of, again, the last couple of weeks, it's kind of hard to know what you're going to get. It was good to see them get a couple wins. I know that, yes, people want them to be in the best draft position that they can be, but I think sometimes it is nice to see that team get a couple wins and feel some kind of confidence. And, I think this is something that I said after the trade deadline that it was very clear, okay, this team is kind of packing it in for the rest of the season. They're kind of looking to the future. Guys are still going to play hard. Guys are still going to want to, prove themselves and kind of, I don't want to, I don't know if audition is the right word, but like getting to see guys get opportunities so they can show the front office, like, okay, I would like to stick around. This is what I can do. You know, somebody like Fraser Minton that I actually totally forgot to mention. You know, he's a guy the Bruins brought in at the deadline in the Carlo trade from Toronto, and he's played some games here. You know, it's kind of hard to make any kind of determinations on guys like that in terms of their production. But I think it is just good to see the Bruins put him in position to kind of see what he can do. So I think, you know, he's a guy certainly that could be around next season for a roster spot. You know, who knows? I do know, though, that it's going to be a lot of moving parts, and there's going to be a lot of guys that come and go. You know, I think that there are plenty of guys that I don't know if you see next season. Cole Koepke, you know, Vinny Lettieri. You know, talked about Zacha, talked about Mittelstadt. Mark Hastalick will be back, which is good. I think that he was one of the few guys that consistently played with a lot of energy this season. So I think he'll be back. You know, Johnny Beecher, don't know about him. Not really sure about his impact this season. But, you know, I really think that it's an offseason that's critical, that you could see a lot of change. You know, defensively, I don't think you see a lot of change. Like, I think Lowry is going to be back. He's going to need to be re-signed. You know, Peak will be back. He has one more year on his deal. You got Zadorov, you got Lindholm, you got McAvoy, you know, and that's five right there. So it's like, I don't think there's going to be too much change there. Goaltending, I don't really see much of a change. The Bruins probably have to hope that Jeremy Swayman gets it together this season. I mean, I think that there's both things can be true, that, you know, Swayman didn't do himself any favors with what happened this offseason and getting a late start to the season. But I also don't think the Bruins' defense was particularly good this season either. And so it's like, I think both of those things can be true, that I think the struggles are somewhat due to, or somewhat on him, but they're somewhat on the defense too. And so I think hopefully that things get a little bit better, and hopefully that you can see guys be in the lineup a little bit more regularly. I know obviously it was too bad that Lindholm only played like 17 games this season. I don't think that continues. I think that he plays a lot more hockey next season. And I think, you know, the one last bit that I did want to say that kind of have talked about a couple times in the last couple of weeks is, who's going to be that next captain? I think that more and more it's clear that David Pastrnak should be that guy, because I think he's really kind of come into his own as leader this season, and I think has found more of a voice, and he's produced, and he's also been available. And I think that maybe there are a lot of people that think McAvoy kind of should be that guy, but I also think, like, Pastrnak's been pretty durable. He's been pretty available, you know, and it's not to knock Charlie, but it's like he has missed a lot of time in the last couple of years with various injuries. And I think that having a captain that's available to play almost every night, you know, kind of is valuable. And especially for a team like this, like the Bruins, that they're going to be going through quite an overhaul this summer. You know, there's going to be a lot of moving parts, and I think to be able to have that consistency at that captain spot and have that availability, I think it's kind of sneaky important. So, you know, obviously not the season that a lot of us wanted as Bruins fans, but, you know, it'll be a interesting offseason, see where the Bruins, you know, end up in the draft lottery, what they do there. Do they get a high pick? What kind of player do they acquire? What does free agency look like? Is there a big trade that happens? You know, I really think anything is on the table for this team, but, you know, you hope that the turnaround is quick, because I don't think that a lot of us are going to tolerate another season like this. So, Bruins, again, regular season finale tonight against the Devils, 7 o'clock at the Garden. And that will be the end of the regular season. So we will get to the Patriots. Talking a little bit, you know, I'm not going to focus too much on the Patriots. as there's not a whole lot of, new information. I do think, though, that there was something that I had seen the other day that I think it was kind of expected that Tennessee is going to take Cam Ward and that Cleveland is going to take Hunter. But then there was something about the Giants and Shedeur Sanders, because I think he's having like a private workout or something. So maybe there's a thought that the Patriots could have the ability to draft somebody like Abdul Carter, which I think would be a great break for the Patriots if they could draft somebody like Carter, because I think that definitely would help elevate that pass rush and give them kind of a premium edge rusher, a guy that I think is going to be an elite player in this league. So I think if the Patriots have him available at number four, they really shouldn't mess around, that they should take the best player available, because I think that he might be the best player in this draft, to be perfectly honest. And I think if he's there at number four, the Patriots should take him. The Patriots certainly have done a lot of work to kind of upgrade the pass rush, signing Landry, bringing in Milton Williams. I know that he's more of a defensive tackle. Barmore, hopefully they think that he'll be healthy. Keon White. And it's like, you think about adding Abdul Carter to that, that's just scary to think about. So would be great if they could make if they could get that done. I don't think that's going to happen, though. Kind of think the Giants are going to take him. So I think the Patriots, all likelihood, are looking at Will Campbell at that number four pick, which is fine. I know that it's like kind of a safe pick, but it's like, to be perfectly honest, if the top three goes the way that I think it's going to go, Campbell, I think, is the best player after that, the best fit. And this is a team that desperately needs somebody at left tackle. And it's like, sure, you can debate about his arm length or whatever, but it's like they need somebody to put there and they need help in the offensive line. So it's like, seems like a pretty simple pick for me. If Campbell is there at number four, that they'll take him. I'd be curious to see if there's a team that maybe wants to trade with the Patriots. Do the Patriots like somebody else later in the first round? Could they trade back? I know the Patriots have a history of doing that, but I think the easiest thing they can do is take Campbell at number four. But if Abdul Carter is there at number four, they need to do that. I know what I said about the offensive line, but it's like you have a guy that's that good that I think can elevate your defense to an elite level. You have to consider taking that chance. But, otherwise, I think it kind of just makes sense to take Campbell. I think next week we'll spend some time looking at other positions the Patriots will look to address in the draft. Maybe take a look at some other guys that they could be looking at if they choose to trade back into the first round or later in the draft. So we'll take a look at some of those guys next week. I think I'm planning to do a first round draft reaction next week after the Patriots hopefully make a first round pick. So I think that's going to be the plan for next week, but it's all the Patriots stuff that we got for this week. So we're going to move to the Revolution, who got big 3 points on the road against Atlanta this weekend, a 1-0 win in a place that is pretty tough to play. Atlanta's a place that I think for the Revolution in particular, it's been a hard place for them to win, but got a good win. Carlos Hill scoring penalty kick in the first half. Revolution doing enough defensively. Ivicic, the goaltender, was unbelievable in that game. So huge props to him for some big saves. Revolution did kind of get some, did get a couple breaks, couple goals that got disallowed. I think both were on offside. So Revs kind of dodging a bullet there, but a good win for them to get the win on the road. They've now won two of their last three games. So building a little bit of momentum. Obviously had their struggles in Cincinnati a week ago with that loss, but the Revs have had wins in two of their last three games. Leo Campana did return in the second half of Saturday's game, did look to be a little bit fatigued, especially in that there's a stoppage time breakaway that he had. But I think obviously he'll be working up his conditioning, so hopefully that starts to improve. And the Revs also got Tomáš Šanchalai back from injury, as he had been recovering from his torn ACL last season. So good to see him in the mix, and I think having those two guys back hopefully makes a huge difference for the Revs offensively. You know, that's kind of been the biggest thing for them this season. Defensively, I think they've been fine. Ivicic has been really, really good in goal. You know, really no concerns about about those spots, in my opinion. I think it's kind of just finding the goal scoring in the attacking half. And I think, you know, Carlos Hill is always going to be doing his thing. But I think if they can get Campana and get Šankalai back into the lineup regularly and starting, the three of them can start to build, you know, some chemistry and momentum, so this team can, you know, kind of get back into the race in the Eastern Conference. So Revs will host NYCFC this weekend at Gillette's 7:30 start. So hopefully the Revs can make it two straight wins and three wins in four. So that's what we're looking at for the Revs. I think we'll move on and talk some NBA. We're going to take a look at the play-in tournament at the moment. So the 7-8 game, obviously we talked about tonight between the Hawks and the Magic. Winner will play the Celtics. In the Western Conference, you have Memphis and Golden State in the 7-8 game. The winner will play the Rockets. And then in the 8-9 game in the Eastern Conference, you have the Heat and the Bulls, and then the Mavericks and the Kings. So again, a reminder of how the play-in works. The 7-8 winner plays the second seed, and then the loser of the 7-8 game plays the winner of the 9-10 game. And then the loser of that game goes home. The 9-10 game, the winner plays the loser of the 7-8, and the 10 seed goes home. So meaning if so, the games that take place tomorrow night between the Bulls and the Heat and the Mavericks and the Kings, the losers of those games will go home. The losers tonight won't go home. They'll have one more opportunity to get in. And I think those, like the 8-9 games, I think are Friday. So tonight, the 7-8 games, the 9-10 games are Wednesday night, and then the 8-9 games are on Friday. So let's take a look at some NBA notes here quickly before we take a look at the playoff, or at the decided playoff matchups. The Suns deciding to fire Mike Budenholzer at the end of the season. They missed the postseason for the first time in a couple of years, I think. The Celtics and the Thunder betting favorites to win the NBA title. And the Nuggets also had fired Mike Malone last week, which was kind of a shocking move. So they are in the postseason. Kind of wild that you've seen two teams in the Grizzlies and the Nuggets fire their coaches, you know, weeks before the playoffs or days before the playoffs in the Nuggets situation, you know, which is still kind of crazy to me. So in the Western Conference, we'll take a look at the West first. The Rockets will play either the Warriors or the Grizzlies, the winner tonight. And then the Thunder will play the eight seed, whatever team comes out of the play-in. And then in the other Western Conference series, you have the Nuggets and the Clippers. That series gets underway. That series gets underway Saturday. 3:30 start, the Nuggets, the four seed, the Clippers, the five seed, and then the 3-6 matchup. You have the Lakers and the Timberwolves. Lakers, the three seed, Timberwolves, the six, That should make for a pretty interesting series. I think both of those first round series should be pretty exciting. In the East, Celtics obviously will play the Magic or the Hawks. And then the Cavaliers will play whoever becomes the 8 seed. The game's Saturday. In the Eastern Conference, the Pacers, the 4 seed, against the Bucks, the 5 seed. And then the Knicks, the 3 seed, against the Pacers or the Pistons. The Pistons, the 6 seed. We'll take a look quickly here with the Wizards and the Jazz finishing with the worst records in the West and the East, respectively, will have the best chance to get that number one pick, as the draft lottery, I think, takes place in May. But we'll take a closer look at those other playoff matchups on Guest Friday later this week. So looking forward to the start of the NBA playoffs. 4 games will be on Saturday with the start of the playoffs with the Pacers and the Bucks, then the Nuggets and the Clippers, Knicks, Pistons, Lakers, Timberwolves, all those games, one after each other. So be a pretty good, exciting start to the NBA playoffs. So we're gonna move on, talk a little NHL. We'll go through some notes here. The Senators are expecting Brady Tkachuk to be back before the start of the postseason. And it was announced that the Sharks' Logan Couture is expected to retire, as he's been unable to continue his playing career. The Oilers will be without Matthias Ekholm in their first round series against the Kings. So we'll take a look at the standings, as most teams have 1 or 2 games left in the Eastern Conference. All the spots have been clinched except for that second wild card spot. So we'll take a quick look here. Toronto in first in the Atlantic over Tampa Bay by 4 points. So in all likelihood, it looks like Tampa Bay will play Florida in that first round series. And then Toronto will have that top seed in the Atlantic. In the Metropolitan, Washington has clinched the top seed in the Eastern Conference, so they will play that second wild card team. So 109 points for Washington, 99 for Carolina, 89 for New Jersey. So New Jersey and Carolina will play in the first round. Ottawa has clinched the first wild card spot with 94 points. So in all likelihood, they will play Toronto in the first round. And then in the second wild card spot, every team has been eliminated except for the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have a game in hand on Montreal. Montreal has 1 game left. All they need is 1 point in their final game to clinch that playoff spot. Columbus is 4 points back, so they need to win both of those games to have a chance in, or a chance to get into the postseason. Teams are still battling for spots in the West, as both wild card teams still need to clinch a playoff spot. But the Jets are in first in the Central, and they've clinched the President's Trophy, so they will play the second wild card team. And then Vegas, I think winning the Pacific, will take on that first wild card team. The Stars will play the Avalanche in the Central, the 2-3 matchup. And then in the Pacific, the Kings will play the Oilers. So the wild card standings, Minnesota in first in that first wild card spot with 95 points. St. Louis second with 94 points. Calgary is still alive, 2 points back of St. Louis. But I think St. Louis, any kind of point or any point in their last game will get them into the postseason, as well as Minnesota. I'm not sure why Minnesota's not clinched yet, but it looks like Minnesota or St. Louis will be guaranteed to be one of those wild card teams. So I think actually we'll take a look at the the standings here. I'm just going to point out the games that are important. Columbus against Philadelphia. Columbus needs a win to stay alive. And then Calgary, obviously, they need a win to stay alive. Minnesota can clinch a playoff spot. Or Minnesota and St. Louis can both clinch playoff spots tonight as Minnesota plays Anaheim. St. Louis plays Utah, so both of those teams could clinch tonight. So you could get all three remaining playoff spots be clinched in the NHL. So we'll take a look at some baseball notes here for the World Baseball Classic. Aaron Judge expected to lead the team as the team captain that was announced yesterday. And Paul Skeens and Henry Davis forming the first battery of MLB number one picks. So they were both number one picks of the Pirates, both pitcher and catcher. So they both made history yesterday for the Pirates. So that was kind of cool. So standings wise, AL East, Yankees lead at 9-7, a half game lead over Toronto. In the Central, Detroit is 10-6 with a game and a half lead over Cleveland. The Angels in first in the West, half game lead over the Rangers. Eric Bellier's Mets lead the National League East at 11-5, 2 games over the Phillies. Cubs lead the Central at 11-8, a game and a half over the Cardinals. And the Padres at 14-3 in the NL West, a half or game and a half over the Giants for the lead in the NL West. So good start for those teams. I'll take a look at some NFL notes here. Cam Ward is one of 17 draft hopefuls that will attend the draft. Patrick Peterson retiring with the Cardinals yesterday. And the Bears giving Kyler Gordon a new contract, making him the highest paid slot cornerback in the NFL. So obviously, we are a week plus away from the draft. It will be interesting to see who gets taken number one. I fully expect it to be Cam Ward for the Titans, and then we'll see what happens after that. So hard to believe draft coming up in about a week or so. It kicks off next Thursday. Actually, not sure where it is taking place this year. Gonna try to figure that out quickly. Because I think it was in Detroit last year. So it's in Green Bay this year, which kind of interesting. Just kind of a random spot for the draft. I kind of missed that it was always in New York City, but yeah, it'll be in Green Bay. The first round starts Thursday at 8. And then Friday will be rounds 2 and 3, starting at 7 o'clock, and then the rounds 4 through 7 that Saturday at noon. So I think gonna do it for the sports this week. Got a great top five for you guys. I was really struggling to come up with something, but I figured I'd go a little bit off the board. Usually we're sticking with, sports or food, but I thought this would be kind of an interesting thing that I could do. I'm a huge Batman fan, so like all kinds of media, so I figured that I would rank my top five pieces of media. So put them into five different categories. Now, all these categories I could do separate top fives for. So, for example, I could do a top five Batman movies, I could do top five TV shows, so I decided to pick one from each of the categories that I put together were movie, TV show, video game, graphic novel, and villain. So this will get a little bit interesting, kind of give you a little bit of an insight into my fandom. So the movie, this is going to surprise nobody. The Dark Knight is easily my favorite Batman movie. There's nothing else that really comes close. I would say, though, that The Batman with Robert Pattinson was a very good movie. I did very much enjoy it, but nothing comes close to The Dark Knight, obviously. In my opinion, I think it's easily the best movie in the Christopher Nolan trilogy. Just everything about this movie is just perfect. The portrayal of Batman is great. I think that the kind of realistic tone that they go for really works. I think Christopher Nolan as a filmmaker is just amazing. So there's just everything about this movie is unbelievable. The performance of the Joker, the music, the sound, it's just, I could just call it the perfect movie, but it's just easily my favorite movie of all time and easily the favorite Batman movie. So obviously, I mean, I don't know what you're doing with your life if you've not seen this movie. So definitely go out and watch it. But I think easily that was an easy pick for this, for my favorite Batman movie. My favorite Batman TV series. Now, again, this was kind of an easy choice, but there are a lot of really solid choices out there. But I had to go with the animated series, which aired in the early to mid 90s. Just, I mean, in my opinion, it's the best, like, Batman TV show. I think it's, easily the best animated show. I think it's one of the best animated shows of all time. I might put it up there with, like, The Simpsons and shows like that, that just, it just is, like, you think that this is more of, like, a kids, like, cartoon series, but there's a lot more depth to it. It just, the way that it looks is really, really cool. A lot of the stories are really interesting. All the different characters that they get into, the different portrayals of different characters, is just really, really interesting. So, yeah, a series that is just unbelievable. It's way more than just like an animated cartoon series. So, if you have the time to sit down and watch some episodes, definitely do that. So the next one, I'm gonna choose my favorite Batman video game, which is Batman Arkham City. Just an awesome game. Really enjoy kind of the detective aspect of this game. Just a great gameplay, great story. It's an open world, but it's not too much of an open world. I feel like, if you're familiar with the series of games, I feel like it's the best game that gives you an open world, but it's not too much. Batman Arkham Knight, I think, gives you way too much of an open world. So it's like, I think this works perfectly. I think that it's such a great story for a game that it could even be adapted into a TV series or even a movie. That's how good I think it is. Just a really fun game. All the different things you can do and all the different, side missions that, you could be, working on the main story, but the side missions are also just a super fun other part of the game that, takes you a while, but it is really rewarding. So really fun game there. So that was my top video game. My favorite graphic novel was The Long Halloween. Really, really good story here. I think there were elements of this story in The Dark Knight, and also I think based on the Batman movie as well. So really, really like this story. It's really interesting. Involves a lot of the, well-known villains of Batman's Rogues Gallery. So really, really enjoy this story. So it has two parts to it. And there's also an animated movie that is like a, or I don't want to say based on, but it's like there's a lot of graphic novels that are get put into like feature-length movies. So that one was really, really good. So would definitely recommend that graphic novel if you're interested in getting into any kind of Batman stuff. And then, this one was kind of tough for my favorite villain. Obviously it's so easy to just say the Joker, and it's like I probably would say it because I'm really partial to the character portrayal in The Dark Knight, but I have to say that Mr. Freeze is probably my favorite villain. For some reason, the The animated series episode about Mr. Freeze sticks with me. For some reason, I have great memories about watching that show with my older brother, and for some reason, the Mr. Freeze, the villain, just always sticks with me. I think that there are rumors that he might be involved in the Batman Part 2 with Robert Pattinson, which gets me really, really excited. But I think always a really good portrayal of him in the video games, in the graphic novels, and in like the multiple different TV series. So, that's really, I think, one of the things I like most about, the whole umbrella of Batman, where it's like you can look at different interpretations of characters, that they're not always going to be the same, whatever the media is. So always kind of found that to be really interesting. So I think that's going to do it for this top five. Obviously, there might be more Batman content in the future. Might try to do a top five of, just movies or whatever, but that was definitely a enjoyable top five. Hopefully you guys enjoyed me kind of nerding out a little bit there, but enjoy. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you guys enjoyed the program today. We'll be talking to you Friday with the NBA playoffs.